If it needs to be said, you'll hear it on The King Review with Gavin King, 846-4CA.
Thanks so much for being with me. Very, very keen for my next chat. It's a bit of a round table chat on a topic, well, affecting the health sector, but of course affecting all of us. We're going to cross right across the state now. In fact, we're lucky to have two experts and professionals in their field. Now, this round table chat, this debate, it's all to do with, pharmacists being able to do more than they have ever been able to do before in the space of particularly diagnosing conditions and then being able to prescribe them. Now, traditionally, of course, there's been a bit of a, separation of powers might be one way to put it, where, of course, a GP would diagnose certain conditions, write you a prescription, and then you'd go to your local pharmacist and they would dispense the medicine. But that has changed. There's a bunch of trials happening where pharmacists are diagnosing and prescribing a whole range of different conditions. So we will delve into that with my next two guests. Now, on the line, I believe in Brisbane, we're lucky to have Chris Owen. Chris is the Queensland President of the Pharmacy Guild. And in Mackay, we've got Dr. Nicole Higgins. Now, Nicole is a GP based in Mackay. She's a spokesperson for the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners. She's got a couple of other key national roles as well. Welcome to you, Chris and Nicole.
Thank you, Gavin.
Good. I'm glad the phones are working. That's we're crossing from Cairns to Mackay to Brisbane. So I'm glad we've got through those technical issues. Now, first to you, Chris, from the Pharmacy Guild. Now, the Pharmacy Guild, of course, represents the owners of pharmacies. Effectively, well, you've been described as the most powerful lobby group in Australia that no one has ever heard of. Tell us, Chris, why have pharmacists been pushing for these prescribing and diagnosing trials? Just tell us a little bit about what they involve, first of all.
Thanks, Gavin. And I suppose the most important thing to realise is that we do have an issue within the doctor's sector, and the fact is that we don't have enough available appointments. We've got a doctor block. We don't have the ability for patients to go and see their GP. And we conducted some research and showed that more than a quarter of North Queenslanders had to visit an emergency department due to a lack of GP access. And of particular concern, there was two-thirds of women aged 35 to 54 that are concerned about wait times and had to go to emergency because they couldn't see a GP. So across Queensland, and particularly in North Queensland, it's 75 to 80% of people are saying that they're in favour of the proposed pilot. And what that proposed pilot is we'll see community pharmacists being able to treat patients for common health conditions. And these are hypertension, asthma and dermatitis, just to name a few. And in order to take part in the pilot, community pharmacists would have to undertake further postgraduate study, supervised over 12 to 16 months. So community pharmacists don't practice to their full university's educated scope, and our members are standing ready, willing and able to assist the Queensland government to reduce unnecessary hospitalisations and drive some savings through the healthcare system. So we know that it works in international examples, so we're just trying to make sure that we run an evaluation first to make sure that it works, and then we'll bring it here.
To you now, Dr. Higgins, in fact, it's not just a couple of conditions that pharmacists can now diagnose and prescribe for. It's my understanding there are 23 conditions, asthma, type 2 diabetes, it's a couple of heart conditions as well. Dr. Higgins, I guess from your perspective, from the GP's perspective, you obviously do many, many more years worth of training than what Chris described there to be able to diagnose some of these conditions. Your concerns about this sort of practice, this pilot program that's happening for pharmacists?
So thanks, Gavin. There's actually two pilots that are underway. One is regarding treating urinary tract infections and the other is about pharmacy prescribing. And yes, you're right, it's not just a couple, it's actually 23 conditions. And I just want to say at the start that GPs and pharmacists work really well together and work very closely together. And there's a difference between your community pharmacy and the Pharmacy Guild. So the Pharmacy Guild are the owners of the pharmacies. The pharmacists who work in the pharmacies that you go to are largely employees and, you know, who've been working very hard during this time of COVID. One of the things that's been highlighted is that both pharmacy and and GPs in North Queensland and Queensland as a whole. There's been a shortage of both. So I'm actually going to say that role substitution is not a workforce solution. We both work well when we work together. And one of my other roles is that I am a supervisor, so I supervise GPs in training and doctors in training. So to be a GP is 10 to 12 years of supervised study. So what the Guild has proposed is that in 120 hours or the equivalent of 3 weeks of training that they can actually do and that's unsupervised, although that they will be part of a program to do what your local GP does.
Chris, I mean, that's a fair point, isn't it? That 120 hours, 3 weeks equivalent worth of training versus what a GP has to go through. The AMA, of course, have raised concerns publicly about some misdiagnosis, a lack of follow-up. I mean, is that a fair criticism, a fair concern that perhaps pharmacists, while they're obviously expertly trained and very well trained in pharmacy, doing all of these other, as we said, the UTI trial being one example, and then there's 23 other conditions in this other pilot. Is that a fair criticism, the lack of training?
If we were doing 120 hours to be able to take participation in this pilot, yes, it would be a fair criticism. But as we've repeatedly said to both the AMAQ and the RACGP, it is a postgraduate course. Pharmacists do undertake 5 years of university-level training just to be able to become a pharmacist, and that involves diagnosis and treatment of disease during those processes. So any further postgraduate study would be on top of that, and that's where the 12 to 16 months comes in. But we're seeing that internationally, pharmacists graduating straight out of university are able to undertake these processes already. So we're finding that the criticisms is a bit of Groundhog Day to when the doctors' lobby had the same concerns about vaccinations. And if I recall, one of the quotes, that patients would be dying in the streets. And it's fair to say that pharmacists have done plenty of the heavy lifting throughout COVID and delivered over 8 million COVID vaccinations. And in fact, pharmacists are living more than general practice in the COVID space now. So,
but I guess giving a shot for a vaccine is a little bit different than diagnosing a UTI, diagnosing 23 other conditions though, isn't it?
I think if you have the skills and expertise to be able to carry out a skill or a process, then it's no different. And if you are adequately trained and you've got the relevant expertise, then you should be able to carry out those skills. And the vaccines were just the first example that showed that pharmacists were able to step into this space that previously was exclusive to the doctors' lobby. So we know that we can do these things. Internationally, it's proven that we can do these things. So it's at the end of the day, it's about patients and it's about access. And we need to be able to fix a problem. And the fact that we have this problem, we need a suite of solutions. And the Pharmacy Guild doesn't advocate just for pharmacists to practice to full scope. It's all allied healthcare professionals, whether it be physiotherapists, optometrists or nurse practitioners. Everyone needs to be practicing to top of scope, and that's precisely what the Minister was referencing when she was announcing the permanency of the UTI pilot.
But I guess physios and some of those other examples don't diagnose UTIs and they don't diagnose 23 other conditions. And when you say pharmacists should work to top of scope, but you're trained to be a pharmacist and GPs are trained on a different scope. So why the push, I guess, then, from pharmacies? You mentioned the workforce shortage there. Dr. Higgins has said, role replacement isn't exactly a long-term solution to addressing a GP shortage. I mean, is it to do with the bottom line of pharmacies to increase the profits for pharmacies in terms of doing more than you've ever done before?
I don't think so, Gavin. I think the most important thing is patients, and we really have to bring this back to patients. So we understand that there's some faults in the current system. We know that there's patients that are going unseen and are having to delay, and that's why we have Dr. Block, and we need to come up with strategies that can be used to overcome these pain points. Look, Australia ranks dead last in the OECD for allied health scope of practice, not just pharmacists. And this is particularly due to the paranoia of the medicine sector over historical years. So it's the colleges system, and I believe personally that that's a failed system. But the facts are we're getting less doctors that are choosing the GP specialty. less again are choosing to own their own practices, and the proliferation of six-minute medicine has meant a compounding loss of available appointments for simple and complex conditions like mental health.
Well, I guess you don't need to be a GP going forward because you could study for a few years as a pharmacist and do the same work that a GP. So I can imagine why you wouldn't want to be a GP. Dr. Higgins, I guess some of your responses to what Chris has had to say there.
So just going through some of the points that Chris made. Look, pharmacy across internationally does vary. In the UK, they're not allowed to prescribe Ventolin, which is not the case of what happens in Australia. And Ventolin is used for asthma, and there's some really strict criteria around that. So what is happening in each country is very, very specific to that country. In Australia, one of the things the Guild have actually done is they've provided a solution for a problem that doesn't exist. There are issues around access, but it's not that general practice is responsible for people going to the emergency department. When you're talking about, it's just a UTI, I think this is one of the things that has been lost in the discussion. Painful urine doesn't equal a urinary tract infection. There are multiple other causes. And going into a pharmacy and being prescribed an antibiotic without actually having your urine tested or knowing the history, if there's been multiple, et cetera, you know, there are issues around our patient's safety and that ongoing care. So when this pilot was going ahead, one of the things that we found is that they lost two-thirds to follow-up. That meant that as far as what we call stringent studies or the protocols that we use, it really invalidates the study that was actually done. And when we then start talking about who is doing this work, is it the owners of the pharmacy who profit out of it, or is it the pharmacists who are working in there? A poll that was taken of community pharmacists working in the pharmacy showed that, you know, less than a quarter actually supported the proposal, and yet 28% were against it. And that was because of the increased workload that would be required on them when they are also going through workforce shortages. There are less pharmacists less people applying to study pharmacy at university. So, as I said, they're trying to provide a solution for a problem that they've created.
Chris, do you acknowledge, I guess, some of the points there about there were misdiagnoses, there was a lack of follow-up? It's not to say that there weren't benefits. I'm sure there absolutely were for patients. But at the same time, I mean, surely the Guild must acknowledge that this trial did result in some misdiagnosis. It resulted in patients having to go to GPs to fix things that the pharmacist perhaps misdiagnosed or didn't pick up on.
Well, there were certainly four occasions within the pilot out of the 9,000 that resulted in some adverse events, and they were reported on in the trial. What you're referring to was a lobby group online survey of their own membership regarding perceived outcomes, and we haven't seen any evidence of those adverse outcomes. I know with the four that were reported, they were all independently assessed as a part of the evaluation, and in those cases, a GP said that they wouldn't have done anything different in those four cases. So on one hand, you have a 118-page evaluation report that's from a professor from QUT, and on the other hand, you have an unverifiable online survey of members of a doctor's lobby.
Have you seen any of these examples or aware of any of these examples, Dr. Nicole Higgins?
I am, and I've actually verified some of the complications that happened of that, and they're by local GPs in Cairns. And that's what has really stirred up this discussion. When local GPs in North Queensland started a conversation about some of the problems that they were seeing, what happened last week before last, I went up to Yarrabah, which is an Aboriginal community just south of Cairns, and I actually got to witness the pharmacy. I got to see how their service works. And the pharmacy trial is, you know, this is one of the places that this trial is meant to be taking place. Now, the vision statement of the Pharmacy Guild talks about equity equity of healthcare standards. And what this means, though, for Aboriginal patients in the Gurney Health Service is they'll be charged $50 to see a pharmacist. Then if they require medications, they'll actually have to pay for those when they can access those medications through Closing the Gap. Like, it's nonsensical and frankly, it's unethical.
You're hearing here from Dr. Nicole Higgins. She's a GP based in Mackay. She's a spokesperson for the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners, as well as Chris Owen. Chris is the Queensland president of the Pharmacy Guild. We very much appreciate both of your time. We know how busy you are, given everything happening in the health sector. Chris, let's turn now more broadly to the pharmacy sector. A pharmacist can own a GP clinic and hire GPs and run a GP clinic, but a GP or anyone else who isn't a pharmacist can't do the same for a pharmacy. There are a whole bunch of protection measures in place to protect your sector. You're one of the last industries, in fact, in Australia that hasn't been deregulated. You can't open a pharmacy within a certain radius of others. And as I said, you have to be a pharmacist to open a pharmacy. So even young pharmacists are almost shut out of opening their own pharmacy because, you know, the quota, if you like, is already met. But why is the pharmacy sector and the Pharmacy Guild one of the last industries that is absolutely so protected?
Gavin, I understand why you would ask that question. It's a great question. And I think that it's just basically comes down to the patients. As I said, we have got a public interest that pharmacists own pharmacy, and you might be aware that there was a bipartisan parliamentary inquiry in 2018 into pharmacy ownership, and that concluded that unanimously it was in the public interest to retain pharmacist-owned pharmacies.
There have also been other studies. Productivity Commission, for example, have called for the deregulation of the pharmacy sector. And that might be anything from, you know, big supermarkets, as it happens in other countries. You've used other countries as an example of what pharmacists can do. Well, other countries, you can get a prescription. You can take your prescription to a pharmacist at a supermarket, for example. You know, that's one example of what deregulation might do. Why is it so protected? I mean, if it's in the patient's interest, well, perhaps GP clinics should be regulated and protected in the same way.
I completely agree with you. I think that doctors should own their own doctor's surgeries, and I think we should have a clinic. There's a concept called clinical governance, and we need to make sure that at the end of the day, patients are at the forefront of what our decision makers do. So, for example, if doctors wanting to own their own practice, then they should be able to have that in regulation. I believe that a number of years ago, they gave up their ownership status for an MBS item reform, and then that led to a market failure. And now we're left in a situation that we've got less than 20% of doctors owning their own surgery, where it used to be well above 50%. So that was an abject market failure, but I agree with you. I think doctors should own their own doctor surgeries, and that the clinical governance should be done by the people on the ground, not from a corporate in Melbourne.
And I guess finally, the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners, Dr. Higgins, I guess like the AMA, do you donate to political parties?
So, no, we do not donate at all to political parties or to anyone. We represent our members, we represent our patients. The Pharmacy Guild, on the other hand, is, I think, number six. It's in the top 10 of our donators to politicians. And there is, people expect a return on investment. And I'm sure the Guild does as well when they're paying money to lobby the government. And, you know, what they expect, this was an election promise, this pharmacy trial. This is how it came about. And as a GP, my patients come first. And if you have a look on the Guild site, when they talk about advocacy, they don't talk about their patient. They talk about protecting community pharmacy, and I didn't see the patient in there. So I think for North Queensland, we, and this may roll out for the rest of Queensland, we need to sit and think, you know, who is your GP? Who is your pharmacist? What do they do for you? And how do we provide a safety net for both the pharmacist and the GP, because that's what we do for each other. What's happening now, it's an experiment, it's unethical, and frankly, you know, it's exploiting Aboriginal communities and especially women in those Aboriginal communities.
Chris, the Pharmacy Guild donated $295,000 to political parties in 2021. You've donated more than that in previous years at different times. Why does the Pharmacy Guild donate so much to political parties, whereas the AMA and RACGP, as two examples, don't?
Oh, Gavin, you've been in politics and you know how this works.
That's the majority point. I guess that's the problem is you do expect a return on investment. Really, that's how it works.
Well, the vast majority of guild donations relate to attendance of events, and the guild is also a member of the business observers or the networking programs offered by all the major political parties. There's no fear or favour amongst that. So the events are open to anyone to purchase a ticket, and anyone who attended these functions knows that policy's never made in the room.
Look, it's money going to political parties. Let's not get bogged down in how the money goes to the parties. You're buying a seat at a political table. But why?
Well, the suggestion is that money buys influence. And you, more than anyone, know how much campaigns cost. And in fact, the Pharmacy Guild has donated to you in the past. But we're not suggesting that we had influence over you, for example. So I think at the end of the day, it is on record, it is verifiable, it is trackable, all the money that the Guild has spent towards political parties.
But absolutely, it's public knowledge, that's what we're talking about. We're not saying that it's hidden. We're just asking if it's all about patients, if it's all about ethics, if it's all about protecting the integrity of our health system, the AMA doesn't donate to political parties. The Royal Australian College of GPs doesn't donate to political parties. The Pharmacy Guild is the sixth in 2021. 2021 was the sixth largest, most generous political donor in this country. Why?
Oh, Gavin, for exactly the reason that we've outlined in this whole interview. I said that we need to be able to advocate against the bodies that are holding back reform in this country. And one of those is on the other end of the line. So we need to make sure that when we get to the best interests of patients and we look at overseas examples like Wales, which by 2030 will have a full-scope pharmacist in every single pharmacy, then that's the areas that we need to be able to have access to. So to say that the money buys political influence, and you know yourself, that's not true, but we do need to be able to make sure that we're in the room. So the most important thing is that we have reform, we have patients at the forefront, and just to Nicole's point about the First Nations access, I think it's abhorrent that they're using Indigenous health as a political pawn. I'll just put that on record, but I won't say anything further about it, but it is abhorrent in my opinion.
Nicole, a final response to that?
Chris, thank you for your time. I think it's actually now up to people to decide about who do you trust. And so patients come first, and that's it.
Very good. It's such an important debate to have, and as I said at the start there, I know how absolutely flat out you both are, and we absolutely appreciate you giving our listeners the time. It is a very, very important debate. Chris Owen, Queensland President of the Pharmacy Guild down there in Brisbane, and Dr Nicole Higgins, a GP in Mackay from the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners. Thanks so much for your time on the King Review today.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks.
Thank you so much to you both. You can check out that roundtable debate on the 4CA website not too long after the show. Such, as I said, a very, very big topic to get into, but we were absolutely a pleasure to have both of those representatives on the show.